All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Harrison Price for Tuesday, April 9th, 2024, coming to you from the Nation Network studio built by Arbor Lee here at the iconic Wall Center downtown Vancouver. If you're heading to a game, an event downtown, make it a staycation, call the Wall, 604-331-1000. Ask for the Harrison Price rate. Some blackout dates apply. Matt Harrison alongside Blake Price. Grady Sass, hitting switches, conducting things. Big show coming up and all brought to you by Applewood Auto Group.
Applewood Infinity in Richmond has the QX60 hot off the presses. 2024s can be leased at 0.99% for 24 months on all trims. You can get the Q50 as well. Also a 2024. Lease it from 1.99% for 24 months. Non-stack cash of $4,000 on all trims. Get it now at Applewood Infinity, the Richmond Auto Mall. It's all good at Applewood.
Poll question today asking you, is JT Miller one of the greatest Canucks of all time? Yes or no? You can vote at Harrison Price on Twitter and YouTube. This after a three-point effort that sees JT Miller get to 100 points for the first time in his National Hockey League career. Of course, 2 years ago, he fell just the one short at 99. So this is justice. This is redemption. Long time coming. He's the seventh Canuck to do it. It's been done 8 times in history. Sedin, Pavel Bure twice, Alex McGillney, Marcus Naslin, Elias Pettersson. That is really a who's who of Vancouver Canucks history. And if you are so inclined, JT Miller is 14th in club scoring all time, sitting at 399 points. That's probably where he'll finish to end this season. He's 8 points away from Don Lever. I mean, I guess he's got an outside shot to
be pretty
to tie
hot.
Don,
yeah,
but that'd be a hell
he's
of
got a,
chance.
Yeah,
I mean, 2 points over the last per game over the last 4 gives him an opportunity. The other thing, he is second all time in points per game with the Vancouver Canucks, 1.11. He is just shy of Bure's 1.12. Those two and Elias Pettersson, the only 3 Canucks in history,
and just
to
think,
average more than a point
because of that 99-point season. Like, if he gets that one extra point, he's in the elite territory of Bure on that list of the multiple one.
Right.
Like, he's that close to being in Bure's company.
As great as Daniel Sedin was, as great as Henrik Sedin was, and as reliable as Henrik Sedin was. Remember the Iron Man streak? Just the one time to 100 points. I voted no. I think he needs a playoff run. I mean, he's getting very close, and if he continues piling up these seasons, he is absolutely going to be in this conversation or force his way into the all-time greats in Canucks history. Ring of Honor, heck, maybe even his number being retired at some point. Getting a little ahead of ourselves, but of course, he signed here long-term. So if he continues to do this for the Vancouver Canucks, he's absolutely going to be in the conversation. One of the reasons I voted no is, okay, so 14th in club scoring is very, very good, but it is 14th.
Mm-hmm.
And the only, of course, postseason for JT Miller with this club came in the bubble. Okay, you want to play in series. You won effectively a first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs series. But if you look at most of the names above him on this list, they have runs to the Stanley Cup final. Sedin, Linden, Smeal, Gradin, Bure, Edler. You know, those who don't, and I mean, Marcus Naslund has a league MVP. Tony Tanney, I think, is a instructive example here. 470 Vancouver Canucks points, eighth all-time at one point, was a hell of a scorer in the National Hockey League, but he's not even so honored in the Ring of Honor. And
much to many people's chagrin.
To some people's chagrin, and he is absolutely one of the, you know, fringe candidates here, one of the near-miss candidates. And I say that because you've always told me if they were going to put him up, they would have put him up by now. But, you know, you look at him, you know, Bertuzzi, Tanti, you know, these are the guys who are maybe just below that level.
The way I think about it is
this. It depends
if
you're a big hall, small hall guy. I tend to be more of a small hall. And so he's just on the cusp for me, but not yet there.
The way that I think about it is this, is he's played, you know, basically two-thirds of a season more than Alex McGinley, but they are effectively in the same sort of boat. McGinley's scored way more goals per game than JT Miller. They've got basically the same amount of goals, but for McGinley, way fewer games. But 308 points for McGinley, 399 for JT Miller. Points per game in the vicinity of each other. And I think if you retired today, I'd put him in McGinley's of like elite stint.
Yes.
Great stint.
Right.
But not an all-timer. I think you need games played column to be a little bit more to get all-time Canuck for me. So,
for sure.
You know, in two more seasons, and let's say he doesn't have to be 100 points over the next two seasons. Let's say he averages 80 points over the next two seasons. You know, 160 more points would put him at 560 points. He'd be sixth in Canuck scoring. In just two more years of 80 points, he's going to be sixth in Canucks all-time scoring.
Yes.
Then we can easily say yes. He's one of the all-time
Canucks.
And
I think so.
Yeah.
Let's get to our top story today. It's brought to you by Douglas. Finally, a victory over a playoff team and sort of, I'm going to use the soccer term here, Blake, kind of a Canucks treble within that victory. You first and foremost secure home ice advantage in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. You take another step towards winning your first Pacific Division title since 2013 and further distance yourself from the idle Edmonton Oilers. But then, and perhaps most importantly for some, a first victory over a playoff team coming nearly a month to the date. The last time you beat a playoff team was March 9th against the Winnipeg Jets. That is, of course, the game that Thatcher Demko left. And he missed everyone thereafter, and you haven't beaten a playoff team since. You picked off some victories against teams you should have beaten, but it was 0-4-1 or 0-5-1, if you wanted to count the Washington Capitals, who were a fringe playoff team in the East, in terms of your record against the better teams over the last month. So, a big sigh, I think, from Canucks Nation and the Canucks dressing room itself. Let's hear from Coach.
Well, let me just say too, like, they won the game. Like, they were the better team. They
spotted the first couple of shots.
They effectively spotted the Golden Knights' two goals in the hockey game. Once they got their footing and realized, oh crap, it's 2-0. I mean, they outshot them by a country mile. It looked like they might keep them underneath 20 shots in the game. They eventually got to 23, but to hold that team to 23 shots, and I know they're missing players, but you know, no one's feeling bad because they've got the salary cap of like $200 million. But like, they won the hockey game. They were the better hockey team. They didn't steal that. They won it. And style points matters to me right now, because we're evaluating, you know, they're going to have a good season. We know the season's almost over. They have had a good season. Now we can judge them by style and what that'll mean for game one of the playoffs.
And you can argue it's the biggest win of the season, given who it is against, the defending Stanley Cup champions, who, needless to say, had some success against the Canucks this season and all time.
All time, yeah.
As recently as last week when they put six on the Vancouver Canucks. Here's Coach Tockett, who is mighty pleased with a playoff-style victory.
Yeah, this is kind of a little dress rehearsal, you know, a little bit to what's going to come. And I think that, you know, we talked to today, this morning, to embrace this thing, embrace the pressure and the noise and all the good things that come with it. Like, don't hide from it. And I just thought tonight, you know, we met it, you know, we met pressure with pressure. It's a good step in the right direction, but listen, we got a long way to go. It's just one of these games that you're happy with the team and then you get ready for tomorrow.
I get the feeling he wants to win three of the next four games. I don't think he's going to be super happy with two and two the rest of the way.
And I love embrace the pressure and the noise as a message to the club, because you have no choice at this point. Yes, there is some pressure when the stakes get high and when you're looking at a best of seven elimination series. Yes, in a market like this that has been so starved for playoff hockey, first time in 9 years, there is going to be a lot of noise, and it's up to this group now to step up and meet these challenges. That's what's at stake here in a couple of weeks.
Top story brought to you by Douglas Mattresses. Did you know that Douglas actually put in the painstaking research as to what firmness people generally like? They found the biggest section, the biggest, you know, part of the curve.
Cross section, yeah.
Said, this is the firmness most people want. Mm. And coming from a ridiculously soft mattress that was the bane of my existence, I can tell you have nailed it. Order yours today at douglas.ca/CanucksArmy and get your fabulous deal on a Douglas mattress. They've got the temperature right, too. Sleeps cool, relieves pressure points, and you don't have to deal with pushy salesmen. It gets ordered right to your door. Free shipping coast to coast with a 365-night risk-free trial. Does that sound good? Order yours today. Again, douglas.ca/CanucksArmy.
One of the storylines that I think got a little bit lost in the aftermath of this game, and we will get to Connor Garland and his exploits, and we will get more to JT Miller and his exploits, and Brock Besser as well. But we were sitting here on Monday, Blake, talking about this is a hell of a ballsy call to go Archer Shiloff, in this game.
Mm-hmm.
Still a rookie. Had played but the two NHL games this year, five last year. And yet here you are in the biggest regular season game of the season, where if you lose it, you invite the Edmonton Oilers right back into the conversation at the top of the Pacific Division. The kid goes out, gives up two goals on two shots to Jack Eichel. Forget it was Shorty or DT said, ooh, Shiloff's got a long way to go now. This is going to be quite a test for him. And yet then I think what happened is what you were talking about on Monday, and that is the guys rallied around him. Attention was got.
Mm-hmm.
They noticed, well, we're not going to hang the third string goaltender out to dry here, are we? Got to be a little better than that.
And I'm sure he wants
at that point it was lockdown.
I'm sure he wants that one to squeak through him back because he was that close to getting it.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I mean, that's Jack Eichel from like really close distance through a screen.
That's the thing, through to Zadorov too.
Well, but by the same token, regardless of the quality of goals or not,
that's got to be stopped.
He redeemed himself and he redeemed the coaching decision on this, because if there's one more leaky one the rest of the way, guess what? Like, we have a much different show today. Forget the milestones, right? Yeah. Forget the round numbers. Did the coach pick the best goaltender to win last night? And what has that done to the season and to the quest for a first division championship in 11 years? So wanted to get to that off the top, because I mean, it was a massive storyline yesterday and into the first period, and it winds up petering out kind of as a storyline because the Vancouver Canucks are able to come back.
But no panic, right? Like, they did not panic. No,
and that's to their credit.
Yeah.
And again, I sort of wonder if that's also because they looked around and said, we're not going to do that to this kid goaltender, are we?
And I think it's also why when they got those first couple power plays, they were like, this is our ticket to get right back into this game quickly and reset. And they did.
Mm-hmm. Connor Garland, you know the round numbers by now. 400 National Hockey League games, 100 National League goals. He scores two last night as the first star. Here he is talking about getting to the century mark.
When that 100th game comes up, right, 200, 300, 400, whatever it is, hopefully, you know, like I said, many more. Like, Mizey's about to hit his 1,000. That's awesome just to be a part of. But yeah, you know, think back to when I was in the minors. You know, my first year in the minors was tough. I only had 4 goals, so, you know, not many people probably thought I could ever come here. But when you make it and you get your foot in the door, you never want to, you know, have it slam shut on you. So it's just about staying and playing as hard as you can for as long as you can. So, yeah, it's just, you know, it's a nice night. You know, I'm sure it's cool for my parents as well as back home. But like I said, it's 400. It really doesn't mean anything. But when you come from where, you know, I came from, sometimes that means a little.
January 1st.
Mm-hmm.
He had 3 goals.
Yep.
3.
He's now up to 18. He's better than last year's 17. He's one off as high as the Vancouver Canuck, which is 19, and an outside shot at his career high of 22. He sold himself a little short. It was 5 goals his first year in the minors. 5 and 55, just 14 points. I can remember reading about him going into that draft in 2015 where people, you know, liked the pugnacity, loved the scrappy fight in him, but just went, oh, he's awfully, awfully small. And he's going to have to be able to sustain some degree of that scoring to make it as a National Hockey Leaguer. Well, 14 points in 55 AHL games to start his pro career, like just 27 points in 55 games the next year. So he's still just a half point per game player at the AHL level before the next season, where he crests a point per game in the AHL. He gets called up by Arizona, scores 13 and 47, and begins his National Hockey League career.
And that shouldn't have been too surprising. I mean, his last 2 years a junior.
He was a good player. Very good
over
player.
Over 250 points in his last 2 years. I mean,
now in the queue.
Yeah.
And a lot of them assists. But yes, I hear what you're saying.
But there was skill there. We knew that there was skill there. And now the whirling dervish is something else.
And this is a player who wanted out. This is a player who had an active trade request on the eve of the season. This was a player the Vancouver Canucks could not give away with his contract at nearly $5 million per year all of last season. Now he's indispensable. He's a top six winger. He has earned his way there. And the crowd was chanting his name. Let's take a listen to his reaction.
Pretty great stuff.
Yeah, you can tell.
And if you saw the quote there,
well, let's hear from him too. Yeah.
I mean, I think what we're hearing is going to be different than the quote. So we should go over the quote that we just saw, which was that he can't wait to see the playoffs if this is what this place sounds like now.
Mm. I think that's what we're hearing.
Let's find out.
Yeah, it's pretty cool for anybody. I mean, you know, they do it for Millsy, which is well deserved. Yeah, I might go down as the worst player ever to have their name chanted in a stadium. But no, it's obviously cool. That's the reward of playing in a Canadian market, playing in a big market like Vancouver. And you know, like I said, the first 2 years were tough for our whole group. You know, this one's been pretty good. And you know, if the environment's anything like that in the playoffs, it's gonna be a really cool place to play.
Yeah. It's like that.
8 career playoff games. He is 28 years of age.
Mm-hmm. Well, Blake Phillips.
That's a long way to go for just 8 playoff games so far. He is going to be, I mean, if you think he's shot out of a cannon most nights as it is right now, what can Connor Garland look like come the playoffs? Like, he is going to think he's in La La Land.
Well, Blake, Philip Ronick is nearly 400 games into his NHL career and will be playing in his first Stanley Cup playoff game when the Canucks touch Rogers Arena ice on April 20th, 21st, 22nd, wherever they may land. Now, you do have a playoff experience, guys. JT Miller's got nearly a full season of postseason 78 playoff games.
Sneaky. I don't think people remember that. Yeah.
And here we'll look. It has been many years since JT was in the playoffs, and he was 18 and 17 games with the Vancouver Canucks during that bubble run. Prior to that, there was a lot of question about his postseason performance. It's just the 9 goals in 78 playoff games, 44 points.
Yeah,
we'll see where he goes. But back on Garland.
Yeah, we have to deal with the fact that he lauded the Canadian city part.
Well,
like
they love it when things are going well.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what we always say, that, yeah, when you're playing poorly in a Canadian market, people notice. And if you indulge all the online criticism, you do so at your own peril. And, yeah, that can make life difficult in a market like this. But now what we saw yesterday, what we're seeing this year, is the flip side. Play well in a Canadian market for a winning team, you walk on water. Look at the ovation Mason Raymond got last night in the barn. No, but honestly, good player. Had a good career, was a middle six forward, and is beloved because he was part of some great Canucks teams.
I tweeted that video, and I was a little shocked how much reaction it got.
We've seen players actually voice in leaving Vancouver, but also leaving other Canadian markets too, saying they were looking forward to the anonymity of walking down the street and not getting recognized. And I get that. I understand there's a release there of not having to be on all the time and not being harassed and all that.
Right.
But those same markets where they're walking down the street anonymously, they're probably not getting their name chanted after an 18-goal season.
And here's the other thing, and Luongo said this, and many players said it since. It's not like anybody walks up to you on the street and curses you out for a bad game or a bad season.
No. As we know with social media, all the bad stuff happens on social media.
Entirely online.
Yeah. In person?
In-person interactions aren't like that at all.
No.
Tocchet, of course, goes back with Connor Garland because at one point both were members of the Arizona Coyotes. He told some terrific stories post-game last night and acknowledged that he gets ribbed a little bit by the players about how much he loves Connor Garland. Take a listen.
I know Gars really well. the players kid me that, you know, he's my favorite, you know, the teacher's pet type of thing. So there's a little bit of fun there. Millsy always busts my balls about that. I've known Gars for a lot of his career in the NHL. That's who he is, right? He's a small guy that plays big. I mean, that second goal, like, where is he? Right in front of the net. He had to change his game from the minors. He was a point getter, like a high, but he had to change his game into being a more complete player. And I think I told you the story with Gars where I was with Arizona, and I told him when we were in practice, I said, you're not a 17 minute player. You're just not. And he looked at me, he goes, well, you better make me one. And I thought that was a big part of, you know, when a player says that to you, and it kind of, it helped my career, like, to be honest with you, like, you know, yeah, you're right. I have to help you out. So we have a good bond, me and Gars, and he plays really hard for me.
What a terrific anecdote there about coach making player better, player making coach better, and that's how it should work. It should be reciprocal. And good on Tocchet for taking that lesson from the player, and good on Garland for having the stones to say that as a young player to your head coach.
Also the admission that, yeah, he kind of is my teacher's pet. I said to you last week, you know, Brian White is the teacher's pet of Andy Sartini. and for the same reason, the two busiest guys on their respective playing surfaces generally will get the plaudits of their coach.
Well, coaches tend to love effort, right? Yeah. They tend to love busy.
They tend to.
They tend to love in the mix, never back down, always be up for a scrap. And that is absolutely Garland. And so much so that even before the game, his teammates were celebrating him and his 400th NHL game. Here's JT Miller, courtesy of Sportsnet, on the T-shirts.
Buddy, a guy that you guys go back and forth with all the time is Connor Garland. You made a shirt for his 400th career game. But in all honesty, what has he meant for this team this season? What do you think it would mean to him hearing the fans chanting his name during the game and post game?
Yeah, it's incredible. He's been one of our most consistent players all season long. A lot of noise around him in the offseason and coming in and a little adversity for him to work through. And I'm really proud of the way he's handled it. You know, we hang out a lot around the rink, especially and on the road. And, you know, he works really hard and easy guy to play with. You know, he's always a buzzsaw with him and Dak. And, you know, it's one of the more fun guys to chirp, you know, back and forth around the room. And I gotta be honest, these shirts were his idea for somebody else, and I stole it to get him back. So it's I'm not taking any credit, but, you know, it worked out great. And honestly, it looked like it helped a little bit today.
Congrats on a big night and a big win.
Thanks, Perf.
And it turns out that Elias Pettersson just passed 400 games. So the suspicion is that he was suggesting that they do it for Petey, but that was on the road, and maybe Petey was in a bit of a slump and they didn't think the timing was right or something. Something fell out there.
Yeah.
And so JT Miller thought, you know what? I'm going to do it for Garland.
Well, and look, on most nights, Brock Besser, the longest tenured Canuck, getting not to 30 goals, but to 40 goals.
That's right.
Would be your top headline. He's just the 10th Canuck to do it. He's the first since 2011. The others to do it, Pavel Bure and Tony Tanney, Marcus Naslund three times, Bertuzzi, Kessler, Daniel Sedin, McGillney, Darcy Rota, and Settlebauer. So that is the elite list of Canucks goal scorers over the years. I mean, like, think of the guys who aren't on that list. Hank Sedin's not on that list. Thomas Gradin's not on that list. Brendan Morse. There's a bunch of great names from Canucks history who did not get to this plateau. And, of course, I still think Brock is one of the most beloved Canucks in the market because we've kind of watched him grow up. Mm-hmm. And we've watched him lose his dad and his family, have to go through those difficult emotional times, Brock himself having to go through those emotional times. He has talked about how it has affected him. There was the trade request, like Garland last year, couldn't give the contract away. And yet here he is, and back with Elias Pettersson, Blake. And this is what I wanted to talk to you about. Have they found new duos here with Petey and Besser, with Miller and Garland? You know, the All-American line.
He's got different arrows in the quiver now. Like, you don't have to commit to these things, and you're under no legal obligation to have them for a month or a week or a year. He's got different combinations that he knows can work. I'm still of the mind that I think at some point in the playoffs we might see the third line back together again, Besser and Miller back together again, and Lindholm with Pettersson. But there's going to be different, launching off points, and Tocchet knows now he's got several different combinations. Like, at this point, Matt, if Lindholm comes back, mm-hmm. is it a wise use of assets to have him playing with Podkolzin and Mikheyev?
I don't know. I mean, there's so much
uncertainty. They're black holes right now.
And we're going to get to J-Pat here from Rogers Arena and practice very shortly. Just the goals over the last little bit here. 4 against Vegas, 3 against L.A., 2 in a win against Arizona, 3 in the loss to Vegas, 3 Anaheim. So
they finally got to 4, though.
Yeah.
I've been marking that.
And, you know, Besser and Petey in the playoffs, we have talked about it. You might be a smidge slow there. You might be a smidge light in terms of the rough and tumble of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Before we finish with stats here, Quinn Hughes, 199 assists over the last three seasons. Only two defensemen have crested 200 assists over a three-season span. It's Bobby Orr and Paul Coffey. I mean, two of the great all-time defensemen in league history, certainly scoring defensemen.
And all these stats and milestones have taken away from the fact that Quinn Hughes, in the first period and a half, said, "We're coming back in this game, and I'm going to lead us there."
Right.
You know, if the game unfolds differently, he might be the top story. He might be the guy that we're talking about after that game. He was tremendous in getting the Canucks back to level.
Indeed, he was. Grady, is J-Pat ready to go? We need a minute there.
No, he's ready.
Okay. Let's bring him in, our Canucks reporter from rink-wide Vancouver, Mr. Jeff Patterson, who joins us from Rogers Arena and the Vancouver Canucks practice. Jeff, good afternoon.
Hi, guys.
So Thatcher Demko joining practice. It didn't quite go as we sort of suspected, at least in the in concept, but he was there. Explain.
Yeah, I saw him with my own two eyes. Came out, worked with Ian Clark and Yogi Stoyakovsky, the skills coach. Went through about 15 minutes of drills, and I saw for about 15 minutes. He may have been out there a little bit longer before we were allowed access into the building, but out there in the back in black jerseys that they will wear against the Arizona Coyotes. Yeah, you're looking at a little video of Thatcher Demko being put through his paces. So first time that I've seen him on the ice since he went down on March the 9th, 1 month ago to the day. And I know he was out on the road trip and skated after practice there, but wasn't on that trip. So my first look at him. And you know, again, I'm not going to make any rash judgments, but the very fact that he's out there and going through the workouts that look like pretty standard goaltender drills, well, you know, these are all promising signs. He's not going to play on Wednesday against Arizona, but perhaps Saturday. Although, you know, a little surprised that if they have an eye on Saturday, that he isn't staying out for an entire practice here. I would think that he would probably want a couple of practices to face NHL shooters to try to get his timing back and just get back into that rhythm and routine. Whatever the case, we've seen Thatcher Demko. He lives, he exists, and he looks like he is on the comeback trail here in the next week or so.
That'd be a hell of a spot to drop in into. I mean, I know, maybe... Yeah. Against Edmonton, maybe, you know, things are such where you don't have to worry about the Oilers anymore by Saturday. Yeah, that would be a hell of a spot to drop him into.
It would, Matt, but a week later, he's playing playoff hockey if all goes well, right? Yeah. And so you're not facing the Oilers in the first round, but you're going to face good opponents, and it could very well be the team that they saw last night in the Vegas Golden Knights. So I hear you, and you're right. If you're drawing up a return-to-play plan, it's probably not facing McDavid and Draisaitl, but maybe he doesn't face McDavid.
That's right. You know
what's going on there. Whatever the case, he's a competitor. He wants to get back in there. That much we're sure of. So, you know, if it is in Edmonton, now the clock's ticking with just two games remaining. So let's see if Rick Tocchet is willing to divulge any more of a timeline on, you know, this organization's plans for its number one goaltender.
And we don't have a practice timeline for Thursday, Friday yet either, right? Is it sound like a practice Thursday and a departure day on Friday? Would that be your guess at this point?
My hunch would be Thursday would be a game day, a day off for this hockey club.
So. Yeah.
They had Sunday off and then Monday, Wednesday games, a Tuesday practice for most of them here. I wouldn't be surprised. There's lacrosse in the building on Friday. So if they skate in town, it's going to be out at UBC, or maybe that is just a travel day and get a full game day skate in on Saturday. But if the plan is to get Demko back into game action on Saturday, I do think that the practice plan here this week is important and is a big piece of this puzzle. So, you know, we'll try to dig around a little bit and see if we can come up with what their plans are. But as I sit here right now, I'm not quite certain how the rest of the week unfolds.
And any concern for the big guns that aren't at practice today?
I think this is a day off for a job well done. For all the milestones that were reached. And clearly, guys, and we've talked about this, Brock Besser has played the games. He hasn't missed any games here, but hasn't been available after he scored against Anaheim on that Sunday, Easter Sunday afternoon, wasn't available. Had the maintenance practice day there the following day. You know, he scored last night, obviously, but wasn't around to getting treatment after. So, I mean, clearly, and Rick Tocchet even said that he, you know, was playing through something last night, and there was some question about whether he was going to be available. Good thing for him and the Canucks that he was such a big goal, not just the milestone, but the timing of that goal to make it 3-3 to, you know, cue the comeback ultimately to get them ahead for the first time in that hockey game moments later from Connor Garland. So Besser's clearly playing through something. I think we've suspected that maybe Petey's been dogged by some sort of nagging injury as well. And I think for JT Miller, it's just a lot of miles on that body this season when you think of the hard minutes that he has played and the way that he has performed. So if this is a reward for 100 points, then good on him. Enjoy the day off.
Before we leave goaltending, who starts against the Coyotes Wednesday, Jeff?
Not Demko, but who?
I would think winning you're in right now. I would think Dr. Silovs probably gets the opportunity here. Again, I'd feel more confident saying that if I knew that Demko was ready to go on Saturday. You know, do you want to throw Casey DeSmith in against the Oilers if he hasn't played in over a week? But Arthur Silas responded and rebounded. I mean, that first goal was brutal at any level, and I felt for the guy You know, the build up, the Stanley Cup champs in town, talking about one of the biggest games of the year, and 2 minutes in, puck goes right through him, like sifted right through him. And the second one, not much he can do there. Somebody probably should have checked Jack Eichel the way that he was dealing. But from that point on, he had to make some saves. And in the second period, in a tight game, once the Canucks had leveled things, made a nice save sliding across from his left to his right on Noah Hanifin on the back door. Michael Amadio had a 2-on-1, and he looked, he stared him down there. And then the penalty kill in that third period. And look, this penalty kill is taking on way too much water. But when EP40 took the penalty with 10 minutes to go and a one-goal lead, like, that was crunch time, and Silovs did his part there. So ultimately, you know, at the end of the night, he wins the hockey game. He's 3-0 this year and now 6-2 as a National Hockey League goaltender.
Yeah.
So it's hard to argue with the wins and losses there. You know, stylistically, sure, there's lots to work on. But I, you know, right now, I mean, if it is about locking everything down that's available to you and still trying to, you know, extend that lead over the Oilers, I think I might come back with Artur Silovs and give him another opportunity to win again on Wednesday night.
And yeah. Last time out, they struggled to get to 20 shots, so it's it may not be high event anyway.
You mentioned Pettersson. What did you make of Elias last night, Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, he's becoming a world-class screener, if nothing else. And, you know, I know people want the end-to-end goals and the highlight reels. I thought, it's a tiny little thing, but I thought it actually was a fairly sizable statement. The first power play they got, they won the draw, they got it in his wheelhouse, and he absolutely unloaded the one-timer. And there's all this talk in the market about, oh, he's reluctant to shoot the puck, and, you know, is there something wrong? I thought that was a really good sign for him and for the hockey club, and it just kind of, you know, it set the tone for this relentless power play that would not be denied, and ultimately it was Connor Garland scooping in the loose change at the side of the net, but Elias Pettersson played a role in that power play. But really, like, you think about the price you have to pay against this big Vegas defense. And, you know, that was one of the things the Canucks did really, really well last night was get to the inside. How many times have we heard Tocchet imploring his guys to get there? One thing to get there, another to stay there. And for him to take the goaltender's eyes away on Brock's goal, but just to be a net front presence, you know, and that's not necessarily something we think of when you think of Elias Pettersson and all of his traits, but did a really nice job of it against a big Vegas defense. So, no, I thought, you know, again, was he the first star? No, he wasn't. There were a lot of guys that had bigger offensive nights than he did on both sides of the ice. But, you know, he was pulling the rope in the right direction, and he's chipping away and, you know, kind of quietly picking up points here as he goes. So, yeah, I mean, I thought the Los Angeles game, there were some signs. I think this was building on that, but we're all still waiting for that signature moment that we haven't seen really since the Buffalo win a month ago.
It did seem like there was something said by the coach, by the way, of take the puck to the net. I mean, I think almost every forward had the puck at one point and went hard to the net with the puck.
Yeah, and, you know, if you're thinking prior to the game against a team like Vegas, like the game plan, you want to get to the inside, but easier said than done. I mean, think last year, go back a year when Rick Tocchet, how many times did he refer to what Vegas had assembled as this massive defense corps? And you could just see Tocchet drooling and dreaming of the day that he'd have something like that. And they've been able to replicate it to a degree here in Vancouver. So not easy to get to the net and to take the puck there and have success, but they did a really nice job of it. And, you know, I you can't pick your opponent come playoff time. They're going to face a good team. We know that. But I think last night, I tweeted this out, like, if it ends up being Vegas, they split the season series. They scored 4 goals last night. They scored 3 in 2 of the other games. They lost and were schooled in the first game of the season series back in November. But they won 2 of 3 here recently. You know, the power play was going. Your best players came through. Like, if they're looking for motivational cues, if in fact they do draw Vegas in the first round, like, compare that to the way things went against the Los Angeles Kings all season long. I do think that there are some things that the Canucks could at least build on. I'm not sitting here making any brash predictions that they're going to dethrone the champs. But, I, you know, just when I'm looking at the 2 matchups and the way the teams have played, Canucks actually had a fair degree of success, if you can call going 2-2. But the way the season series started, it ended up with 2 wins apiece mm-hmm. and looked pretty good last night.
Forgive me, have we accounted for Elias Lindholm at practice, and what's next for him?
I'm not in a position to see the ice right now, so yeah. I can't. I didn't see
he wasn't
him.
There early then, Jeff.
He wasn't there early, so yeah.
I'm running short there as well. We'll see what comes of that, of anything. Lastly, Jeff, all the milestones last night, which one was your favorite?
I think it has to be Brock getting to 100. Or he wishes. Brock getting to 40 goals. There were too many milestones. Look, I've covered him since day one here. We know the storylines. They abound, obviously. And we wondered at the outset of the season. I mean, I asked him at training camp a year ago, or 2 years ago almost now, about was this the year for 30? And obviously, it wasn't last year. And so for him to get to 30, to do that on home ice, to get to 40 and do that in front of the home fans, and for it to be a big goal. Like, I was thinking about this earlier. Like, he had always been a goal scorer. We know that. 29 in his first season. He backed it up with 26 more the following year. He scored a bunch of goals early in his career, but he did so on horrible teams through no fault of his own. And so I just have to imagine that it's so much more rewarding for him to score big goals in big games against good opponents. He scored the winner against the Boston Bruins in here in overtime 6 weeks ago, and then against the Stanley Cup champs to level that game at 3. And so to be contributing to the cause that is something so much bigger than just him padding statistics. And I know those early career goals, I mean, you know, I'm sure they all felt good, but they're sort of empty calories. These ones just have so much more weight behind them now. And so just a really cool moment to see Brock Besser become a 40-goal scorer in the National Hockey League. And that is not to demean JT no. getting to 100, because that's an incredible accomplishment for him. And, you know, I like Connor Garland and just his openness and honestness after, you know, 400. To some guys, it's just a number. And I know he tried to downplay it, but for a little guy that was told a billion times he was too small and would never get there, for him to play 400 and score his 100th goal in that same game, it really was just a cool sort of happening there on a day of the eclipse, all these cosmic happenings to bring all these guys together to their big round numbers.
Cosmic yeah. happening.
Well, no, but I mean, think back 2017, 2018, like our only fascination was, oh, this Besser kid, and yep. he's a goal scorer, and yep. he's a pretty smart hockey player, and he's actually better two-way, and he's got to improve his speed, but there's a lot to like there. Then he's joined by this fleet of terrific young talent, of course. And I don't want to say gets lost, but he wasn't the focal point. He wasn't the fixation for us anymore. It's awesome to see him get to that number 40 and have the career season that he's having.
It's why I picked the backdrop here behind me as well. For the,
well
the
done, sir. Here. Well done.
I look like I've got his stick in my ear as a Q-tip, but... it is one of the photos that adorns the wall here in the press box. Hey,
they do wax their blades now, so that would be not a bad idea.
Jeff, we'll let you get downstairs, cover practice, and bring us everything that is said after the fact. Thank you for this, and we'll catch up on Friday.
All right, guys. Sounds good. Thanks.
Jeff Patterson, Jay Patter, Canucks reporter, of course, the host of Rinkwide Vancouver. And if you're unaware, Rinkwide Vancouver, now on YouTube, now immediate after the game. Check it out Wednesday after the Vancouver Canucks face the Arizona Coyotes.
Two bits of housekeeping. Two bits of housekeeping. Lindholm is out there, so that's the good news for Canucks fans. He remains an option. He's getting, I mean, this would have been an easy day off for him. If a lot of other guys were taking maintenance days, it would have been an easy one for him to take off. So maybe a good sign that he's out there. Secondarily, we hadn't fully referenced the McDavid injury. He's officially day-to-day. Jeff was making reference to that about Demko facing McDavid. Yeah, it looks like McDavid might be touch and go for tomorrow's game against the Vegas Golden Knights, which almost serves the Canucks just as well as him missing the game versus the Canucks, because, of course, a win for the Golden Knights helps the Canucks immensely. So, even if he misses versus Vegas but plays versus Vancouver, that still could be helpful for the Canucks. He's officially listed day-to-day. He's not ruled out yet versus Vegas, but it's questionable at this point.
Do you sense any sandbagging there?
In what sense?
Well, just that the Oilers would like others to believe that Connor's not 100%.
Oh,
Is that a way for the Oilers to basically get McDavid some rest down the stretch? Or looking at it and going, okay, we're not going to catch the Canucks for first. Do we really want to imperil 97 in games when we're effectively locked into second?
People say that there is an injury that he suffered with 5 minutes to play on against Calgary on Saturday.
Okay.
So there is a moment.
They're pretty much clear of Vegas, right? They're 6 points up on Vegas with a game in hand. So there's no downside, really. anymore to the Oilers season. I mean, I suppose if you lose out or do something squirrely like that.
I think they'd just call it a maintenance day, though. I think they would just say it's a maintenance day.
You think so?
Yeah. Like the fact that it's now come out as injury, I don't know. I don't think he needed that.
I got to say, I'm getting a smidge concerned about Lindholm and Demko. I told you Monday, or maybe it was late last week, I don't love the idea of dropping Demko back in against the Oilers. I hear what Jeff is saying, that at some point you have to play games with stakes and you'll be playing a playoff game a week thereafter. I get all of that. I just think, particularly if McDavid does play, that is a most difficult. I would like a feel-out round for Thatcher Demko, where he takes a couple of jabs to the face, but not any kind of uppercuts or crosses or haymakers. And I think that's a game where you can take some of those bigger punches, and maybe to the detriment of confidence, and of course, to fuel the Edmonton Oilers' confidence against the Canucks, which, as we know, was quite shaken earlier this year in those blowout Vancouver victories. I still like the notion of Demko playing the final two games, Calgary and Winnipeg, and then getting to the playoffs. And so we still have plenty of time for that. We're still a week away from that Calgary game on the 16th.
Well, I think tomorrow night plays a big role in all this, Matt, because if the Canucks get a win tomorrow night and the Oilers lose tomorrow night,
game, set, match?
Well, it's not, but it certainly reduces the enormity of the head-to-head game.
For sure. And remember, Edmonton's playing Friday, too.
Yeah.
In advance of the Saturday night hockey night game against
the Canucks. Right. You even have that intel. Like, if they happen to lose both of those, well, then you play your back. You don't rush Demko back at all. If they split it, gives you some pause. They win both, you might be inclined to play Demko.
Well, I mean, yes.
And if the Canucks happen to drop inexplicably the game versus the Canucks, I think if Demko's good enough, then I think you might have to put him in.
Then on Lindholm, and I know you have a wish, you have a dream, that he is going to play with his namesake, Elias Pettersson, on the same line, with one of them manning center and one of them being kicked to the wing. I just think we're getting short in the day for that, because it doesn't sound like he's going to play against Arizona. You're down to three games.
Based on what? I think he might play tomorrow night.
You think he's got a chance? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, two practices now under his belt already. Right? I think it's a possibility for tomorrow.
And those movements were like game simulated movements, shot, rebound, cross crease.
Yeah, he's not up for a twirl. No.
Right? So.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a chance.
So then the question is, four games enough?
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
enough for what, though?
To put those two together and try that again. Even though Talkett has said, Lindholm's the center, I got to play him.
We can't have it both ways. Like, people get mad that the Golden Knights stash players and all, then you get to drop Mark Stone in for game one. Well, if we're saying that, like, you know, these players take so long to ramp up, then why would anybody be concerned about Mark Stone dropping in for game number one?
Well, it's not about ramping up necessarily. It's about chemistry with line mates. Like, to me, we're short in the day on that with Lindholm and Pettersson. It didn't necessarily work great when it was first tried. And if you're telling me there's going to be four more games here, I think you just have to bite the bullet and say he's our third line center. We hoped he'd be more when we acquired him. We paid a hefty price thinking he would be more. But the fact of the matter is, we have enviable depth down the middle to be able to go Miller, Pettersson, Lindholm. Whatever he gives us on the offensive side is gravy, but we know we've got an elite defensive centerman and penalty killer there who's probably better offensively than most teams' third-line center anyways. And
do you love the way that Pettersson line's going right now? Like, chemistry-wise? Like, Pettersson himself looks
again,
better?
I don't love the combination of Pettersson and Besser together on the same line in the playoffs.
Yeah.
But in what's left of this season, I'm okay with it.
Like, I don't think any, as evidenced by the goals four column that we just outlined, getting to four seemed like a monumental task here recently. I don't think anybody's going like gangbusters.
No.
So
except for Garland and, yeah.
Yeah.
Garland and Hughes, but yes.
But those
I hear what you're saying.
Those are sort of solo missions in a lot of ways. Like, I think those goals are going to happen with no matter who they're playing with right now, you know? So, I don't know. I don't think that they've hit it out of the park just yet. I really like the idea of Besser, Miller, and Joshua.
Mm-hmm.
But then, then all of a sudden, under my plan, where the hell's Garland?
Well, you take Garland away from Miller then.
Yeah, no, but where does he end up?
Yeah.
Hoglander down, Garland with the two Eliases, maybe that's it.
Well, I wonder about Pettersson with Hoglander and Joshua and Garland and Besser with Miller.
I think the familiarity will strike with that third line. And I almost look at it as this is like a mini preseason, right? How many preseason games do the vets get in before the regular season?
Two, three, four,
depending on you know where they're at. So,
but we're right on that line, right?
Yeah.
Especially if anybody misses tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
All I'm saying. Okay, let's move on. I don't want this to go unmentioned. What a brutal fucking play from Howden last night. Mm. That's attempt to injure on Nikita Zadorov. How does that not get further discipline? It's away from the play. He uses his off arm to propel Zadorov to the ice. He positions his feet just so to be able to trip him and have him fall backwards. And then he uses his stick as extra leverage.
It's the illegal.
How the hell does that one?
It was the illegal tackle in the NFL. The one,
Yeah, it's the hip drop tackle.
It was a hip drop tackle that nearly, that knee, oh my God, tucked underneath him.
Oh my God, knee, ankle, everything.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Not good.
At peril there.
Is that payback for the hit from?
Well, that's the other thing. You've got motive here too.
Yeah.
Which is why I think it's attempt to injure. And we talked about it with Zadorov last week. Bad hit, not great hit. Contextualized. Wish he hadn't, but he did. Paid a steep penalty for it. 5 in a game. This one was every bit as bad.
Yeah.
That's not a hockey play. That's not a hockey play.
And if you throw the book, I mean, I think everybody agrees Zadorov's was a penalty, but he got the book thrown at him for the
in-game.
You could have maybe made the argument there for at least a double minor or something. Oh. You know, like, yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that should be supplemental. I mean, it's slew foot. There's a number of things going on there that are against the rules.
And two arms wrapped around him.
And just things you don't see because it's not a hockey play.
No.
In any way, shape, or form. So, discipline in this league, rules in this league. And folks, get used to it, because once the playoffs start,
who knows what we're getting?
You know, game in, game out, there are going to be these calls and non-calls and matters that probably deserve further discipline than
First round, they usually call penalties. It's the second round and beyond where it gets Wild West, usually.
And there was a good, if you want to call it a study by Jay Fresh, the narrative of the refs put away their whistles from the playoffs. There's actually more penalties, and I don't have the data in front of me, more penalties
I've seen this the last few years, yes.
Than you'd think.
Yes.
But the one thing about those studies, the score effect penalties.
Sure, yeah.
Also, any kind of melees or scrums at the end of a game
that'll skew it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Throw those out. Those don't count.
And I think
it's very easy to be throwing guys, giving them minors or even majors at the end of a game that's a 3 or 4 goal game and you've got scrums going on everywhere.
I think that deep dive is where I got the first round thing, though. I think that the first round there wasn't really much of a downtick at all, but then there was afterwards. So we'll see. It's been a while. We're all getting reacquainted with the postseason.
Right. Let the boys play, they say.
Right. The other thing we're getting reacquainted with is, final standing, where you finish, opponent, date, time, all of those things. Like I was thinking yesterday, could I see television asking for a Sunday, April 21st, 4 p.m. local time start here in Vancouver? That's a 7 o'clock game back east. Probably the Leafs on the Saturday, the 20th. Yeah, I could probably see that.
Sunday 4 o'clock game? Yeah, I can see it.
Yep.
Giddy up. I love that. On a Sunday. Friday, Saturday, 4 o'clock games, not as much.
Well, you're not going to get a Friday 4, but I hear what you're saying. Saturday. We like our hockey at night in Canada.
Yeah.
Playoffs are near, and we have an army. Nation Gear ready to gear you up for Vancouver's playoff run. Rep your favorite team as they battle for the cup. Shop the exclusive We Have an Army playoff tee and more at nationgear.ca. All right, let's get to today's menu. We just talked to J-Pat. And coming up is John Shannon as well, the former executive producer of Hockey Night in Canada. We talk about form and process and Garland and Joshua, JT Miller.
Brought to you by Ben Moss, of course.
Right, a potential first-round matchup against the Nashville Predators. Today's menu brought to you by Ben Moss Jewelers, proudly Canadian-owned, operated, history dating back more than 100 years. Five locations in BC, including Willowbrook and Langley, Coquitlam Centre, committed to customer satisfaction. You can check out the large selection of Canadian mined diamonds, lab-grown diamonds, and these mined diamonds are available with payment plans to suit your needs. For more information, check out benmoss.com. Ben Moss, shine bright.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Garrison Price from Wall Center presentation, Applewood Auto Group.
Applewood Ford in Port Hardy has some 2023 F-150s that you should have. They have them. You should have them. Finance them at 0% for up to 72 months.
I like that.
On select trims. Give them a call. Applewood Ford in Port Hardy. It's all good at Applewood.
It's 0%.
0%. 0.00.
Yeah. Poll question today, do you consider JT Miller one of the greatest Canucks of all time? Yes or no? You can vote at Sikerson Price on Twitter and YouTube. Speaking of Twitter, hashtags the best and worst of Twitter.com, brought to you by our friends at Northlands Golf Course. And I'm going to start us off, Blake, at Calgary Sun, Stampeders to salute Wally Buono with Wall of Fame edition. He will be the 50th member of that club's Wall of Fame, honored sometime in the 2024 season. Coach, the Stamps, it's almost like people forget because he's become such a fixture
here,
of the BC Lions and of, you know, Vancouver and across the province with where they brought training camp and off to Kamloops for a 14th straight year, 1 month away. But he holds the Calgary franchise records for most games coached, most wins, most playoff victories, most championships. And if you're sitting there going, boy, what took the Stamps so long to get around to this? Part of that was Wally. I was with him. In fact, I walked, you know, Wally's pregame routine was he would walk laps of the field. And in Calgary one afternoon, and he said, hey, come walk with me. And I said, Wally, I'm looking up at all these honored names. You're not part of this. And he goes, they've come to me with it. I've told them not while I'm a member of the BC Lions. I would just feel weird about that. I want it done on a day where I can go there and root for the Stampeders and everything be clean. I'm like, gotcha. So here you go. Congratulations, Coach. Well deserved.
Indeed. At Devin underscore Haru, USA beats Canada in overtime 1-0 at the Women's World Hockey Championship after an obvious missed tripping call at the other end of the ice led to a 3-on-1 for the Americans, and they ended it. And I don't think this is a byproduct of there being sort of this unwritten rule of contact in women's hockey. Sometimes that can be a problem in these U.S.-Canadian games because there's just different rules for when these two teams face each other. This was a swung stick at the feet of the Canadian player. Down she goes, and it's a 3-on-1 the other way. It looked like a bad call. Now, again, yeah, this is part of the round robin. It's not critical for Canada, but it can have repercussions down the road in terms of medal round and elimination games. It's a competitive game, overtime game.
And reading about it, I heard the intensity was incredible.
Yeah.
There was a heck of a speech post-game from the U.S. coach to his dressing room. And, yeah, those are how fine the margins are typically when these two teams get together. And you're absolutely right, Blake, as someone who's covered women's hockey in the past, the referees adopt a different standard with the physicality of the game when it's Canada-U.S., as opposed to when it's Canada or U.S. versus another country in the world. The North American ladies, they play a rougher brand of hockey. And usually the officials let them get away with more. And, of course, in some cases, there are penalties called, penalties missed, or penalty imbalances. As Wickenheiser once upon a time pointed out to the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Stark terms. At Optostats, Zach Edey tonight scored 35-plus points, grabbed 10-plus rebounds, had 2-plus blocks, scored 60% of his team's points. No other Division I player in the last 25 seasons has done all of that in any single game, NCAA tournament or not. No storybook ending for the big 7-4 Canadian center for Purdue. They are second best to UConn last night in the NCAA championship game, as everybody was second best to UConn for the last two tournaments. This is the first repeat champion since the mid-aughts when Florida did it. And an extraordinary run of 12 NCAA tournament games for Connecticut where they win by double digits in each and every one of them. I'm not sure you can pick three players from this Connecticut team or last year's Connecticut team and say they measure up with Larry Johnson, Stacey Ogman, Greg Anthony of UNLV, or Christian Laettner, Bobby Hurley, Grant Hill of Duke, or even Joachim Noah, Al Horford, and Corey Brewer of the Florida team that last repeated. But this was just about as dominant as any of those, and an extraordinary accomplishment in an era of transfer portal and one and done and name, image, and likeness. You've got college basketball teams that are turning over their entire starting five and a couple of rotation pieces.
And even the big ones like Duke and UNC.
No, exactly.
Yeah. So it's easy to say, oh, it's UConn, it's a big school. They can do that. But the big schools, particularly the southern big schools, are like, they're having trouble keeping people
usually
too.
Usually you get those quality players. They're gone in a season or two.
Yeah.
Anyways, it was a sublime first half. It was a championship-level first half. Both teams, both ends of the floor. It looked like it was heading towards all-time classic territory. But Connecticut is so good that they don't double-team Edey when they have their 7-2 center on the floor clinging. They give up what they give up on the inside, and they gave up a lot. But they said, you're not going to hit threes on us, and Purdue did not hit a lot of threes.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just so good offensively with the cuts and the movement and the screens and the understanding. Huge basketball IQ. They were an absolute joy to watch on both ends of the floor. So congratulations to that team. That was, I almost don't have the words with regards to how impressive that was over the last two seasons.
Speaking of that, at Daily Faceoff, who is Landon DuPont? The 14-year-old defenseman has earned exceptional status to play in the WHL a year early. This is for next year. The scouting report enclosed from Stephen Ellis at Daily Faceoff. You're going to get to know Landon DuPont, we think, over the next little while here. He's the son of Mickey DuPont, journeyman pro who made his name really in Europe and was a six-time Spengler Cup player for Canada.
Six
times, wow. Spengler Cupper. He has obliterated records in minor hockey. Mm-hmm. As a 14-year-old, he played in the U18 stream of the Edge School Prep program. He had 62 points in, get it, 30 games as a defenseman.
Right, I was going to say a 2-point-per-game defenseman, right-shot defenseman, too.
And
under 18.
You playing against some 17, 18-year-olds near the end of the season, of course.
Guys, he's 14 years old. He turns 15,
yeah,
in May.
Yeah, so he's only the second full-time exceptional status player in WHL history. The only other guy is Connor Bedard. WHL's been very loath to give out.
Very loath. The OHL has given this status to more.
Yeah.
Including Sean Day, who never amounted to much. But
everybody else is tracking pretty well, though. McDavid, Tavares, Shane Wright, who's still writing some chapters, mm-hmm. Aaron Ekblad, and most recently Michael Misa. So we'll see what Misa has to say about all that.
2027 draft.
This
eligible.
Will be the first pick in 2027 if it continues to track like this.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting.
And
he's 5'7", 170, but he's 14.
Well, I got him at 5'11", 170.
That's what I just said.
Oh, I thought you said 5'7".
No, 5'11".
We'll check the tape.
I said 5'11". He's probably got form. I mean, I didn't stop growing until I was 19. So this kid's going to be probably big enough by the time this is all said and done.
At Cam Cox 12, shots fired. Scottsdale Mayor Ortega strongly opposes the Coyotes' proposed new arena location. This is of 12 Sports Arizona. Quote, Mayor, the proposed Phoenix version bordering Scottsdale was presented without mention of market demand for a new entertainment venue disguised as a hockey arena or congested highway access or questionable arena zoning entitlement. The prospect of a rookie developer attempting to buy Arizona State Trust land with absolutely no infrastructure on the Phoenix side of the 101 Scottsdale Road intersection at the doorstep of Scottsdale is not feasible or welcome. As stands today, the fantasy hockey project must move west away from Scottsdale.
Yeah, that's not going to help the case.
No. Well, and as Saravelli told us on Friday, even if they win this land auction in June, right now there's no water there, there's no irrigation. They would have to do all of that themselves. And as Mayor Ortega points out, they are rookie land developers.
Yeah, that's a little personal there. That got right. Personal there all of a sudden.
More evidence that Phoenix, Arizona simply does not want ice hockey. They've tried it. They don't like it. It's time for this franchise to move.
Well, I've heard about these stories too, that a lot of these municipalities in the desert are shutting down development because of the water issue.
Yeah. Is it the Colorado River or one of the rivers there?
Both of the two big ones, Colorado, yeah. And what's the other one there? The two main rivers that feed the western, yeah, part of the nation are at like a 40% capacity, right, or something.
There's
like that.
There's been a lot of news stories about,
yeah,
this.
And so they're not trying to expand because they can't. They don't have the water to service the people that are there and the infrastructure that's already
that is
there.
Correct. And that is hashtags for today, brought to you by our friends at Northlands Golf Course, where you download the free app and book your tee times with a touch of a thumb. And while you're on course, of course, open the app, hole-by-hole GPS, track your score, 6 to 90-day reservations, jump the queue, lock in your dates at a $10 per player booking fee, limited daily availability. There in singles, save yourself from the dreaded wait list, book yourself a tee time online. If an existing twosome or threesome is on the sheet, you can slot yourself right in there, have a guaranteed spot, peace of mind. Check it all out. Go to golfnorthlands.com. Our next guest is John Shannon, the former executive producer of Hockey Night in Canada, the co-host of the Bob McCown podcast, and he's a presentation of the Arnold Palmer Design Whistler Golf Club. Counting down till opening on May 10th, club reminds organizers of groups of 12 or more, time to lock in those tee times for the 2024 season. Primetime's filling up fast, and just for reaching out, you, the organizer, you get to play for free. Whistler Golf Club takes care of the rest. Tell us about your group, whistlergolf.com.
I love Arnold Palmer.
Groups. Mm-hmm. You would love the Whistler Golf Club as well. Mm-hmm. And John, the Bears are back.
Golfer as a kid, boy. He was mm-hmm. my favorite.
Well, it's Palmer designed, and on course you can see a bear, sometimes a golden bear. No. Masters Week, though, a lot of fun in the golf world. How are we doing, John? How are we feeling about these Vancouver Canucks?
Better today.
It's a roller coaster, man. It's a roller coaster. Every day.
Have you
different.
Told your friends in Edmonton they're finishing second? Have you let them know that?
We talked about this last week. They were mad at me that I said it last week.
So. We did. And I was.
I'll tell you what. There are, you know, is it vital that you go to the playoffs, you know, on all eight cylinders? Remember when we used to have eight cylinders in cars? It's not as vital as you make it out to be, but it sure is nice. And what we saw last night was some really, really strong efforts of guys that are expected to contribute a great deal in the playoffs, beyond Miller. But when Garland and Dakota Joshua are doing what they're doing, that to me is the start of a good venture into playoff hockey.
My case has always been, John, you just don't want to feel like you don't have it. You don't necessarily have to be all eight cylinders. Like I think if the Canucks win two of their next four, they will have won four of their last eight. They would have been 4-4 in their final eight. It's not bad. It's not good. Mm-hmm. It's just you don't have to reach that far back to remember what it feels like to win.
It's enough of a taste.
It's enough of a taste.
The palate is happy enough.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
I think last night, because it was a divisional opponent, because it was an elite team,
yeah,
I think that's a really good taste to have in your mouth at this point. And a reminder that if you work hard, and let's face it, I thought in the second and third periods, they really worked hard. Mm-hmm. If you work hard, you will get rewarded. And that to me, and I'm not going to sound like Rick Tocchet too often, but that to me is about the process that he's been preaching all season long.
It's been quite a lesson in patience for Canucks fans and media, like in watching some of the development of players. Connor Garland was on the market, available.
Connor Garland did not want to be there.
No, from his own perspective, I think the team was ready to get rid of the contract because of the length of the. And yet now you just can't even imagine those days.
No, well, and by the time. Well, so Tocchet's question is, Miller, Joshua, Garland, good second line. Well, would you rather have Bluger, Garland, and Joshua as your third line? That's an interesting dilemma for the coach this week. And that's the one thing that when you have, you know, another 10 days to look at the schedule and still experiment a little bit, that to me, I'd love to be in that coach's meeting because – I loved Bluger centering that line. And yet when JT Miller's there, those two other guys make him better and he makes them better. So it's fascinating to see exactly what the coach will do.
There's no other wingers going. Too.
Well, that said, is Garland and Joshua have to be top six wingers because right now your only other guys who mask or the only other guys who are top six wingers are Besser and Hoglander. If, you know, Lindholm could play the wing beside Pettersson, that would be a different story. If McKayev was a 20-goal guy, that would be a different story. If, you know, Pius Suter was doing better or Vasily Podkolzin had developed, then you might have options. But at this stage of the game, I think you're locked in with Joshua and Garland. They have to get the lion's share of minutes based on, A, the way they're performing,
right,
but, B, the way others aren't performing.
I think I like A because they deserve it. They deserve that opportunity, and it truly becomes a great story. And when you think about Joshua coming back and playing, I mean, he's still not 100%. He's going to get better over this next 10 days before the playoffs start too. And I think that he, in many ways, with all the great stars that are on the Vancouver Canucks, it's a guy like Dakota Joshua that becomes the personality of the hockey club.
Mm-hmm. Let's ask you our poll question. And John, just before, so you have the correct information here. JT Miller with his 3-point night, 100 points. He becomes the seventh Vancouver Canuck to hit the 100-point mark, joining Bo Sedin's Pavel Bure, who did it twice, McGillney, Naslund, Pettersson. And he is 14th all-time on Vancouver Canucks scoring with 399 points, but one of only three Canucks to average a point per game. You consider him one of the all-time great Canucks?
Too early. Too early. I'm still one of those guys that views team accomplishment as much as individual accomplishment. I'd like to see JT in a playoff series for this hockey club. We've had a little taste of it in the bubble, but I'd like to see more. He's certainly pointing in that direction. The one thing that I think that people in Vancouver have to be thrilled with is he's embraced the city. And not everybody does. And that to me is a big part of his success. Is he loves the fishbowl. He loves playing in the fishbowl, and you can see it every time he's on the ice.
For the past 4 years, he is 10th in NHL scoring.
I'm not sure how much he loved the fishbowl in previous years, but you're right. Garland, you know, they're chanting his name last night, and he talks about, oh, this is one of the great things of playing in a big Canadian market. They weren't saying these things in previous years about the market.
I'm glad you brought that up, Matty. Madison Square Garden, you know, the upper balconies and the chance for players, you know, the Henricks when he played, and all the great players that have played there and the fans there. I think what the fans in Vancouver have done this year has elevated so much of an appreciation for the fan base. You know, this is one of the toughest cities to play in the National Hockey League. And many, many times once the game was underway, there wasn't much reward for the players. But to hear the JT Miller chants, to hear the Garland chants, that tells me there's a passion and a belief. And gosh darn, just good old-fashioned fun at Rogers Arena. Yeah. And that's something that's been missing for a long time. And the fans deserve a ton of credit for creating that environment.
Mm-hmm. There was some joking around at the All-Star game that JT Miller was maybe the odd man out, the odd orange with the apples, if you will, for the skills competition.
Nikita Kucherov solved that problem.
Over the last 4 years, he's 10th in NHL scoring, ahead of a guy named Sidney Crosby in the same amount of games played, basically. Yep. Guys like Jason Robertson, William Nylander, all behind JT Miller. Is he underappreciated in the league? Do people know what JT Miller's done over almost now a half decade? And for that matter, if you go back 5 years, so a full half decade, he's 11th in NHL scoring. So it's not much.
Funny, there's one place he's not underappreciated, and that's in New York. How many times have I talked to Ranger people or Ranger
really?
Fans? And gosh, I can't believe we got rid of this guy. Mm-hmm. You know, and there were, you know, I don't know if you remember, but at trade deadlines passed, when the Rangers were out searching for properties, they were saying, well, what about JT Miller? We'd love to have him back. I do think he's underappreciated. I do think it's the classic Western, the Western biases, the Pacific's time zone issues mm-hmm. that we see all the time. But he's in good company when you think of Drew Doughty and Anze Kopitar.
Right.
A few of those great players.
Yeah.
But I also think that there were times early in his time in Vancouver, and you guys saw it more than I did, where he was his own worst enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's coming together. So his edge, his opinions, his demand for perfection are now appreciated because the team's playing better. And so remember the night he yelled at the goaltender leaving the ice in Winnipeg?
Yep.
Well, I think that would be appreciated now. I think that they
it doesn't happen like that. Now. But it doesn't happen like that anymore, John. Like, that's the beauty here. Is, and they haven't had a ton of adversity this year, but, you know, back in March, they lost, or late February, they lost five straight games.
Yeah.
And it still didn't rear its head. Like, he's been able to channel it for good, if you will, rather than for evil.
And I think that Rick Tocchet has a lot to say about that.
Probably, yeah.
There's a relationship that has really created a bond between the two gentlemen that helps that scenario. But the big test is coming, Blake. Mm-hmm. What happens if they're down 2-0 going on the road?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, like it's like every team that we see at this point that has made its impact in the regular season. Now, how do they make an impact in the playoffs? Because everybody starts at ground zero on the 20th of April.
Well, and let's, you know, let's be clear about JT's tenure in New York, because we had a chance to talk to Alain Vigneault about that. And the first thing he said, Blake, if you remember, he said, I really like JT Miller. But Miller has since told the story that Vigneault went to him and said, look, you're going to be a great AHL player if you keep this up. You need to get a little more, a little more detailed, a little more professional, you know, and all of those things wound up being traded to Tampa. And then when the Tampa trade to here happened, and full credit to JT, he said he had a come to Jesus moment. He looked in the mirror and went, okay, now a second team has traded me. I've got to do some things differently here. And he became a professional. And the other thing that I think helped him is that he was a veteran. I mean, not the most tenured veteran, but he was a veteran that came to a group with young players. And it was like, oh, they're looking up to me. Oh, like Elias Pettersson's asking for faceoff advice, or, you know, or we're working on faceoffs with young centermen. I think he, because he's a bit of an old soul, I think, Miller, I think he got into the perfect scenario for him at that point in his career.
It's a really good point. It also teaches every management team, maybe just be patient with some guys that have, we know you have skill, we know you have drive, and it doesn't necessarily come together when you're 22. It comes together when you're 26 or 27. Mm-hmm. And it's paid off for, well, and guys, I mean, did this organization have to make a choice between Horvat and JT?
It's another great point.
You know, yep. And there was lots of people that think they made the wrong decision. I think that they made the right decision in the end.
Yeah, we haven't litigated that recently. Well, but it's true.
You know, several things have happened. Number one, JT has become a better defensive player, and JT has become a bona fide, no doubt about it, center iceman. And those were some of the things that we were litigating previously, that Bo was the more natural center iceman.
Yeah.
Now, poor penalty killer, but he was a decent matchup center at one point. And of course, Bo scored a lot of goals.
But there was more high end skill with JT. And for I think sure. They recognized that.
There always was.
He's and, now and I'll tell you what, I know it's ancient history now, but Miller's leadership during COVID, when the Canucks were so heavily hurt by COVID and they had the game suspended and then they wanted to play them on a Thursday night, it was Miller's voice that was the loudest about, hey, we can't play yet. You've got to give us a couple more days. And in the bubble, it was Miller's voice that got hurt a lot.
Yep.
And I think that that's all part and parcel of this maturation and this growth of him as a person and a player that the Canucks are taking advantage of.
I know you'd like to, at this time of year, John, look at if the playoffs started today. Well, if that was the case, the Vancouver Canucks would play the Nashville Predators. A thought or two on what that series could look like from your point of view.
Scary because of UC Saros. You know, they're a big, tough team. They can be physical. Their defense, Roman Josi and Ryan McDonagh, is as good as there is in the National Hockey League. As of today, and don't laugh, they scare me more than the Vegas Golden Knights do.
Mm.
Just because I think Andrew Brunette has, you know, since going 16-0-2, they've probably been a 500 hockey club. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but they've gone up and down, which is to be expected. But they know their path to winning and how to play the game. And I think Nashville's a scary opposition for anybody in the Western Conference.
Well, you're right. That streak's a long ways behind them now, but there's still enough memory. I still feel like they have the momentum, even if they're not unbeaten in 16 as we speak right now. They don't have to reach that far back to remember how to steamroll teams. And you're right. That's a little bit intimidating if you're heading into round one.
I also don't, if I'm Rutherford, Alvin, and Tockett, that's, and we have seen a Nashville Vancouver series before. I don't want to be traveling that
much. No, you do all this work to get home ice advantage and you're cursed to go all the way to Tennessee for the first round. No, you're right. That's not a win for the first place team.
Yeah. So maybe let Edmonton win.
Wow. No, but the one thing I will say is, boy, versus the Kings in that 1-3-1, I think I'd rather.
Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. They can beat the one. They can beat. It won't be as entertaining as what we would see against other teams in a series. But yeah. The Canucks can beat LA.
Yeah. Hey,
I think they're due to beat LA. To be honest, I really think
one would think.
Yeah.
Lastly, here, John, what did you make of the goaltending call last night? That he goes Sheloff's instead of Smith, and how many? Think couple starts would be enough for Thatcher Demko. Would you be comfortable with that rolling into the playoffs off too?
I would. The Sheloff's one is interesting. And they may have actually lucked themselves into a situation of knowing who their number two goalie is next year. You know, Casey DeSmith is an unrestricted free agent. He's been great.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably the biggest workload in a short period of time that DeSmith has had in a while. From his time in Pittsburgh, but to give Sheloff a chance to play a game like he played last night and play as well as he did, that to me is a bonus. And that means the guys are walking around the office today saying, hey, we have no issues in goal with Demko or whoever is our number two guy.
He's probably outrun his $1.8 million salary to DeSmith, so you probably can save some money by going with Sheloff's next year as well. So
it's all about saving money.
Yeah. No.
It's all about saving money.
Yeah. Well, the good news is at least that cap goes up by a significant amount next year. I know a lot of teams are already committed.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is at least it's moving in the right direction. I think we will be talking less about cap space and that sort of thing in future years as we have over the last few.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Yes, I am serious. I know they'll spend to it. I know they'll commit. But I'm just saying, I don't think we're going to have like 28 out of 32 teams in cap hell, as we have seen over the last few years.
There will always be cap hell, Matt, because there's always going to be those, you know, three or four players on every team that are going to want more money than the guy across the dressing room.
No, that's it. And some of these GMs and owners just can't help themselves. Kevin Hayes, 7 years. Yeah, let's do it.
Speaking of Gary Bettman, did you want to go somewhere else?
No.
Salt Lake's prospective NHL owner was on social media yesterday.
How was that?
Asking for team names. He's not been given a team. From what we understand, there's nothing, you know, what do you think Gary thinks of that? We differ as to whether or not Gary actually blessed that interaction.
I think Gary blessed that. I think everything Salt Lake now is blessed because they want the hell out of Phoenix with this.
To me, I thought it was Jim Balsillies putting cart before horse, but you tell us.
I am of full belief that if you want to play in the sandbox, Mr. Bettman's sandbox, you do not do anything without his blessing.
Mm-hmm.
I am sure that there was a phone discussion. I don't know. I am sure there was a phone discussion. Hey, Gary, I'm just going to throw this out. What do you think about it? You know what, Ryan, you do what you want to do. Not, no, don't do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's, hey, Ryan, go ahead. You know, there seems to be a real synergy between the New York office and what Ryan Smith is doing in Salt Lake City. And I think that to Matt's point, it might be a good emergency stopgap if things fall flat in Arizona. As you know, not only was Ryan Smith putting out a team name forum on social media, the mayor of Scottsdale was telling the people around.
Yeah, don't even bother. Right. Don't even bother.
Yep. Infrastructure for an arena in our neighborhood. Yep. So things are starting to formulate a little closer to what a lot of people have hinted.
No, I mean, I'm fully prepared to be discussing the Salt Lake City Coyotes as soon as next season.
By the way, I figured that was an easy move because I think Salt Lake City Coyotes, have you ever been to Salt Lake City?
Yeah, it sounds good, too. Rolls off the tongue.
There's tons of coyotes in the mountains.
Right, SLCC. Right. Great stuff, John. Thank you for the time here today, good man, and we'll catch up next week.
Cheers, boys.
Harrison Price from Wall Center, presentation, Applewood Auto Group. Join us Thursday, April 18th. Another game day hosted by Canucks Army and Harrison Price at Greta Bar YVR Watch Party. Vancouver takes on Winnipeg. Doors at 4, tickets $10. Good food, good prices, guaranteed good time. Get your tickets at nationgear.ca. Well, it's a fantastic time in the year of sports, and in fact, maybe one of the best weeks in the year of sports. Now, NHL stretch drive, typically this is the final week of the season. Season's been pushed back a little, so it's penultimate week. All these races that are going on across the board, either for playoff spots or playoff positioning, division titles. We get the first golf major, men's major of the season, the Masters, arguably the biggest golf tournament in the world. NCAA championship game on Monday night. Major League Baseball home openers. And, of course, our Vancouver Canadiens who open at the Nat here tonight on Tuesday. You're a month away from Lions camp. The 70th season, incidentally, for the BC Lions coming up. 14 straight years in Kamloops. And changes to the Fan Fest program this year. There will be a street festival in Kamloops. And the players are going to be attending, so they'll do on-field activities and a scrimmage 3:15, and then 4 o'clock the street festival gets going. That's on May 18th in Kamloops. So it's an extraordinary time in the world of sports, and of course the two baseball teams of note faced off on Monday in the Blue Jays home opener. Toronto wins it 5-2 at a once again renovated Rogers Center. This is 2 years in a row.
It does look great, by the way.
Boy, it looked popped on TV.
Yeah.
Looked fantastic.
Yeah.
Those seats behind home plate are...
And it looks like a real baseball stadium.
Yeah, it's... Yeah. Well, they no longer have to accommodate football.
What'd you think of the new camera angle?
Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah.
I like that too.
Mind it.
And Barrios has been damn good here. Not so much for Castillo, sadly, for the M's, who are 4-7, and in part because the starting pitching hasn't been as good as they thought it might be. Still not entirely sold on either team. But
weird, all those Mariners fans in BC were awfully quiet last night. I wonder why.
Mm-hmm.
Basketball, Phil.
I got to say, I this early in the season, it's harder to get behind that series and get into all of that.
Well, I think baseball in general... Right? It's
well, there's
such
just
a long
so many
season.
Games.
And the other sports kind of take primary viewing time. So,
find myself fixating on baseball and teasing all the M's fans, you know, after the Canucks are done. And, hey, let's face it, most years it's been around this time as well.
Mm-hmm.
But not this year. Anyways, the Blue Jays are in Seattle just after Canada Day on the 4th of July. So, another, what should be, beautiful summer weekend in Seattle for the invasion and the takeover.
There's a bit of a controversy, though, about who should be in the lineup for the Jays on a regular basis.
Davis Schneider.
Yeah. Is he?
Fans love Davis Schneider.
But he's got big hits. He's single-handedly won them two games of their five.
Right.
And he can't get in the lineup every night? The other night, he hits the ninth inning home run to win them the game, and he's not in the lineup the next day.
Yeah. Well, he does strike out a lot.
But.
Well, and here's the thing. Given the way last season ended, And given that there were a lot of people who thought John Schneider would be the scapegoat, and frankly, Blake, I think the backlash from fans and media towards management and the analytics department in terms of taking Berríos out of that game and losing it to Minnesota, frankly, I think that might have saved Schneider. Because I think Shapiro and Atkins looked around and went, oh boy, if we fire the manager, that is going to look horrible. It's going to look like we are officially scapegoating him. So I think that in part saved John Schneider's job there. And I would suspect that if they're not in contention by midseason, I think you can see a managerial change there.
Jordan Romano, Eric Swanson, and Danny Jansen all nearing a return. So we'll see if that helps.
Honestly, the Blue Jays have done reasonably well, given you've got maybe your two biggest high leverage relievers hurt. And Kirk pretty much has to play every day because you don't have that secondary option of Jansen. Their catching is going to be really good if Jansen gets back on form, because Kirk has taken a step here defensively. And, of course, he's always been a pretty good contact hitter. So, and needless to say, their offense, you know, could use it, because you subtract Chapman and Gold Glove defense at third base. You subtract Belt, who had some good moments for them last year. You know, Turner is a professional hitter, but I'm not sure they're a better team offensively. Okay, let's get into poll question results from Monday, where we asked you what player holds the key to a Canucks turnaround, and more on the phrasing here in a moment in E's and O's. Thatcher Demko, Elias Lindholm, Elias Pettersson. Which player holds the key to a Canucks turnaround? Who won the poll?
It's either Demko or Pettersson. I'm going to go Demko.
Correct. Percentage?
46.
61.
Oh, boy. Ran away with it.
Yeah. Petey got 33% of the vote. Although a lot of the comments are like DeMarchin. Several of the games we lost since Demko left were close one-goal games where DeSmith played well, and Demko would have made zero difference. Canucks need goals. Saw that a bunch of that in the comments. Mm-hmm. Bazinga wants to write in Dakota Joshua. Dude is a beast. Need more than the big boys to get the job done. Case in point.
Everybody's going to contribute.
Yeah.
Who's the biggest?
Well, I mean, to me, Joshua was already contributing at a high level. Sort of the intent of the poll, I think, was who needs to get going or who can, you know, have the most dramatic effect when they come off the injured list in Demko's case. Okay, errors and omissions. Brought to you by Yellow Dog Brewing, Neighborhood Brewing. Yellow Dog Spirits, Foolish Winery. English Lit Guy, what player holds the key or which player holds the key? Do we have a grammatical mistake in the
which
poll question?
Player.
Yeah.
It's looking at if there's limited options or more overarching options. I have often found myself looking this up, asking our engagement questions.
Right. I believe it's which. And you may have heard there's a little bit of construction going on around the Wall Center here.
Did people notice the massive shop vac that was sucking the life out of the building?
There was a little bit of noise yesterday as we began the show on Monday.
We've had a couple shows in a row. One was hammering on Friday. Massive
and
fan or vacuum
and
yesterday.
Right as we went live, too. Yeah. Like, within the minute. The timing was... I'll be damned.
No, you could have meditated in here for the 2 hours before showtime. As soon as we go to air.
As soon as we punch up the live. Here we go. Anyways, hopefully not much of it bleeds through on the audio side of things. Grady Sass, anything from the Gray Clips inbox?
Nada.
We move right along. Thank you for listening.
Festival, don't forget, the Okanagan's favorite beer fest is fast approaching. Come join Yellow Dog and Neighborhood in Penticton for Fest of Ale on April 12th and 13th. It's coming up. Weekend full of craft brews.
And shout out to our partners at Yellow Dog yesterday for a fresh load of the beer.
Gorgeous. It will get drank.
No doubt about it.
Thanks for listening, everybody. A reminder, subscribe to this podcast, Rinkwide Vancouver, which is now live and on video immediately following the game. Canucks Conversation. Follow on social. That's Twitter, Insta, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. We are live on many of those platforms, 11:30 a.m. Pacific time, weekdays. And, of course, support the community sponsors you hear us talking about. Keep it local.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.